Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke. I'm more inspired than King Kong Bundy's offense at Mania 11. I'm far more subtle than Undertaker's blade job at Mania 15. And to answer a 22-year question, I gave Hulk Hogan that black eye at WrestleMania 9.
I'm Carl Jones, and just like WrestleMania, I'm all grown up. And now that I'm bigger, better and badder, I insist that all females refer to me as the granddaddy of them all.
I'm G. John Chase, and quite frankly, these last few days since I lost the Kevin Nash trial have been quite trying. Carl still won't forgive me. Tried to sing Please Forgive Me by Bryan Adams through his window, but he ended up throwing loads of beer bottles at me. There were loads of them. He will forgive me. Bony?
I'm Kieran O'Rourke, and to be a little contemporary, I'm going to bring you some breaking news. As of about 2 hours ago, it was announced by a worldwide study that the average penis size is 5.17 inches. So from white men around the world, I'd like to say thank you very much for so many Chinese people bringing down the average. Thank you.
This is the panel for the 31st Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear part one of our Ranking the WrestleMania series next. Hello everyone and welcome to the 31st Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside Kieran O'Rourke.
Good evening.
Carl Jones.
Ooh.
And G. John Chase.
Eating a sandwich.
We are here today for part one of a three-part series ranking the WrestleManias. This all began actually about a year ago. I first wrote the column where I ranked the WrestleManias in order, and it's being republished this year on steelchair.co.uk. This has been a source of much controversy as this list was put out, and it's a very, very interesting topic, I feel. This is obviously the time to talk WrestleMania. We're 3 weeks away from this year's incarnation of the show, so it's a good time to look back and reflect. We're talking the bottom 10 here today, so from worst to first in order. This list, as I put it together originally, the list that we're going to be talking about today was one I originally wrote, but obviously all the feedback that we've got from you guys and obviously the opinions around the table are going to be based on that. The list was based on match quality, hype quality, historical significance, the critical and artistic success of the show, and that pesky little thing called nostalgia, which always plays a part in any wrestling fan's opinion. So why not kick it off with the worst, number 30, the number 30 entrant, the dirt worst WrestleMania as I have it, WrestleMania 9 from 1993. It's actually very interesting to see just the wide range of opinions on all these shows that we're going to talk about here today, but WrestleMania 9 particularly was one that always sticks in my craw. Widely considered, I think I'm fair to say, widely considered one of the worst WrestleManias of all time, but the particulars about whether it's dead last or not is obviously up to interpretation. But my opinion on this show is that it's the worst for so many reasons. There are a lot of bad shows in WrestleMania history, shows with not too much merit to them. To me, the ones that I marked at the very bottom were ones that had to have a discernible negative, that had a very negative implication, that was much more far-reaching than just a bad show. The pros on this show, obviously we got the opener with Shawn Michaels and the Tonk, which I think is pretty good, but the major negative of this show, obviously, is what happens at the very end with Hulk Hogan winning the championship, moonwalking his way to title number 5 at the expense of Bret Hart, who they just spent 6 months building up to be the future of the company. They get cold feet, they go back to Hogan, the proven established draw, it blows up in their face in colossal fashion, they go back to Bret Hart a year later, but the damage that was done to Bret, it was very, very difficult for him to move on. You got bad matches up and down the card, you got cheap finishes up and down the card, the hype going in was awful, the crowd is largely bad, I just don't enjoy this show at all, and there's bits of good in there, it's not completely without merit. The Shawn to Tonk match, like I said, is pretty good, Head Shrinker's Steiners is alright, but again, just big picture, there's so much bad on this show, and I want to get the opinions of the panel about this being, the designation of this as the worst WrestleMania, because like I said, we're going to be getting to the feedback all throughout this show, but this immediately stands out to me. There's a handful that immediately come to mind as the contenders for the worst, and I don't think any WrestleMania had as big a negative in terms of the direction of the overall product as this one did.
On this point, with WrestleMania 9, I don't actually agree with you, as I don't think personally myself it's the worst, but it is definitely one of the worst. I think I had it number 28 in my own head. And that's only after kind of like a rewrite. When I first jotted down everything, it was a little bit higher in this bottom 10. And I was actually thinking like, no, actually, I don't think it's that bad. I think I can actually almost defend this against Liam, until I actually tried to figure out what the defense was and then realized there isn't one. And just quite frankly, this show is absolutely just atrocious. As you said, the only pro points to that show you've already commented on, which is the Shawn Michaels match, Steiner's Head Shrinkers. I'd add another one in there, not a match, but I thought the post-match angle after Perfect Luger.
With Sean backstage.
With Sean backstage, I thought was well executed and was kind of sort of slightly different to what you'd usually see at that time.
Yeah, I'd agree
like
with
the
that.
Backstage
very
skit.
Memphis angle.
Yeah, I thought that was good. And I mean, the only other thing, I guess, because I've actually seen WrestleMania 9 a lot, in terms of these bottom 10, I don't know why. I think maybe I find it slightly easier to watch because there are people on the show that I like. Like, you know, the Bretts and the Razors and the Shawns and so on. But with the exception of those first two matches, it's just a poor show. I mean, Razor Ramon versus Bob Backlund.
That's
like
awful.
I don't know what the fuck that had to do with anything. Disappointed with Luger Perfect.
Yeah, that's a
letdown.
Let's not sleep on Money Inc. Mega Maniacs, which bad match.
Yeah. Oh, really bad match. I mean, and the three things that really kind of puts it down there. For me, not right at the bottom. There are worse, I think. But right down there is you're exactly right with the build. The build was atrocious. So I have actually recently been watching 93 through on the network. And just when you get to that February-March period, there's just really nothing that they're doing, particularly on the Raws anyway, to build the show up. I mean, they barely build Bret Hart, Yokozuna.
Yeah, they get one very standard contract signing angle with a bonsai drop, but it was paint by numbers. I mean, and again, going in, Bret Yoko was the weakest WrestleMania main event to date at this point, compared to, you know, and obviously with you, Hogan had been the anchor for so many years, and now it's Bret and Yoko, two guys that they've been building up really since October. From the year prior, and again the photo, you know, after 6 months of driving in one direction, it was like they decided that Hogan was the way to go. And I just can't emphasize how much, just how short sighted that was at the time.
The strange thing was that even like you just turn around and say, oh, Hogan got all the press again through the Raws as well, because I was only able to see the Raws. Hogan isn't promoted that much on the Raws either. Their match isn't either. It's the only kind of matches, funnily enough, that's kind of like promoted in any sort of way on the Raws was the Steiners tag match and the Luger Perfect. And I think maybe the Undertaker Gonzalez as well. But the, Hogan turns up on one show to put over Brutus and do the angle, which they're going to go for the tag titles, and Bret and Yokozuna are barely on it. Then you got, which is the main negative point, which is the whole Hulk Hogan situation, him coming in after the Bret Hart Yokozuna match and just fucking destroying
wins
Yoko
the belt in 10 seconds,
just buries Bret in the meantime. But the one that I'm not quite certain, you might correct me on this, because when I was reading your article, which is a very good read by the way,
steel chair like cut at UK folks, thanks for the plug, G.
The one thing I think you put on there, I think you put it as a slight positive, but I put it down as the biggest fucking negative going, if you wanted to convince me that this should be at the bottom, and that's the fact I hated the fact it was in Caesar's Palace. To me, I don't care how much they spent on it, it looked tacky. It looked cheap and tacky to me, the sets, the whole gimmick of it, and it's just like, the fact that they never really went that far with a gimmick with a WrestleMania ever again. They've done little things here and now and again, you know, 21 goes to Hollywood and so on, but they never gone as full out as they did WrestleMania 9. I think there's a reason why. The only thing that was reasonably enjoyable was at the start when Heenan comes out backwards
on the camel. Matched only by the moment when Savage pulls his toga up and gives a thumbs up to the camera.
But yeah, that's the only pro point to it, because obviously Heenan just sells it so well.
Jim Ross falls in very naturally on commentary. This is his debut here with the WWF. And I thought, and he actually did a pretty damn good job.
Everything else, you're absolutely right. It's an absolutely atrocious show. Again, but there are worse.
Well,
in my opinion.
In your opinion, I personally disagree, because it's my list, but the one that goes without saying, really, it's one of those things that you talk about Caesar's Palace seeming tacky, again, given the context of the time, the backdrop the year before, the Hoosier Dome, which seems like it's a massive success. Kieran, I'm keen to get your thoughts on this WrestleMania and its designation in last place here. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of actual order, I haven't done one and I won't do one. I subscribe to the Mike Coughlin grading system, which you also did for this, lad, and I agree. I give it an F. It's one of the worst. Probably talk about this more when we talk about ones further down, but I mean, I wouldn't argue with it being the worst. It's terrible. I mean, everything's been said. The only thing I'd say is even like the Shawn Tatanka match didn't do much for me.
Good action, but the finish, it was so gutless.
Yeah.
It screamed of, how do we get out of this?
Yeah,
in so many matches.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. I was going to say that kind of echoed throughout the card. In terms of the venue, I think I actually didn't really care too much about it at the time. Obviously, visiting Vegas and seeing the venue, it looks shitty from the outside. It looks not impressive. And obviously, yeah, I mean the Hogan debacle. You said it all already. Really, this is no arguments with it being last, but it's in my bottom group anyway. Yeah, okay, absolutely. Yeah.
Carl, you think?
It's lower, right? To me it's lower than whale shit. I agree completely.
Where would we be without our resident cynic?
I agree with you completely. It's bottom of the barrel for me. The venue, I agree with Chase. To me it does come across as tacky and isn't fitting for what is supposed to be your grand event of the year. You know, I'm not a fan of the idea of the world's largest toga party. I'm not a fan of Fincus Maximus. And I'm sure as shit not a fan of The Undertaker versus Giant Gonzalez.
No.
That gives me nightmares to this day. You know, it's... Yes, you can look at Tatanka and Sean and say that was okay. You can look at the Steins and Hedrickens and say that was a fun match. G mentioned Perfect and Luger. Well, as good as Kurt Hennig is, he can't polish a turd.
And I don't think that he was all that interested in that match either when he found out he was doing the job, because it's a real phoned-in effort.
And I don't blame him. I don't blame him in the slightest. The tag title match is terrible, as you've pointed out before. And when it comes to the main event, I'm sure I've referenced this on a previous podcast, but when you give this proposition to someone, the only correct answer is you don't do it. The scenario then. If your answer is anything other than you don't do this, then you are wrong.
Proofs. I think you said time proved that. I mean, 2 months later, 3 months later, whatever.
He's out of the company.
Hogan's gone. Yoko gets it.
Doesn't appear on Raw after he wins the belt.
Refers to it in a promo in Japan as a trinket.
Oh, yeah, compared to the IWGP belt, right?
Yep.
Yeah, he did wonders for that belt.
Of interest, when was the decision made to go with Hogan?
Well, I'm sensing that they'd pretty much that it was the plan from the second they lulled Hogan back. But from as the year began and Hogan wasn't in the original plans, and they looked at this card on paper, and they probably thought this needs a jump. It needs Hogan, and it's probably part of the deal. I'm assuming it's part of the deal to get Hogan back in the first place. If I'm gonna be back, I need to be on top, brother.
Yeah, well, Hogan was so excited he flipped his jet ski. Allegedly.
I'm sure Hogan didn't come back to win the freaking tag titles, yes. Did he? So, but the only other thing, like as a slight annoyance, is if I remember right, Todd Pettengill in the crowd with some of these freaking dudes and stuff that he was asking.
What about the questions to the Japanese
fans?
Yes,
the Japanese. Oh God,
that was awful. We get to some feedback here. Carl from Pro Wrestling Only. WrestleMania 9 was the worst for me. I loathed that show at the time. I have not gone back to it since. Tigerek from the UK Fan Forum disagrees. WrestleMania 9 is a fun show in a unique setting. It features several angles that set up future angles that the company desperately needed at the time. Its biggest crime as a WrestleMania is that it isn't a feud-ending pay-per-view and it doesn't have a really excellent match. That said, it's more entertaining than 1 and 2. It's miles better than 4 and 11. It's better than everything below the main events in 5 and 6. It's more iconic and an easier watch than half of the mid-2000 shows, albeit lacking in the match quality. The King of Swing from the UK Fan Forum completely disagrees and says, other than the setting and the opening, WrestleMania 9 is the absolute drizzling shits. Even as a Hogan fan, I couldn't sit through the whole show. XL from TPWW says, I think I might be the only person alive with fond memories of this show. I think it was the first Mania I saw close to it happening. Everything before then was Silver Vision, VHS. Royal Rumble 93 and Mania 9 were the first shows I got to see within a few days of them happening, thanks to a neighbour. Watching it now, it's clearly very poor, but I still have a soft spot for it. Devon Malcolm from the UK Fan Forum has given 9 reasons why Mania 9 is good. Number 1, Heenan... Number 1, Heenan going backwards on the elephant. Number 2, the Tatanka HBK opener. 3, Razor Ramon. 4, the superb twin doinks twist. Number 5, the obviously great Steiner's Headshrinkers match. Number 6, you can't kill the Undertaker because he's already dead. Which I believe was a Randy Savage line. Yeah. Number 7, Yokozuna versus Bret Hart was more than acceptable. 8, Hogan beats the Jap. 9, Razor Ramon, who is listed twice in a real Chris Jericho list kind of a move. This doesn't push it over the edge for me, but okay. Dr. Peter Venkman from the UK Fan Forum is in. The Steiners versus the Headshrinkers match is alright. The rest is shite. The best thing about the show is Savage talking absolute bollocks on commentary, even by his standards. I'd say any WrestleMania that has at least one very good to great match, subjective as that is, shouldn't be considered as anywhere near the worst. So you're looking at 1, 2, 4, and 9. And that was actually a lot of the mentality that I had when it came to ranking the ones at the bottom, this F grade kind of an area, the ones that I felt were really bad. To have nothing that could be considered, you know, elite or exceptional, really, by the standards of the time, So again, that leaves us with very few for the bottom. So with that in mind, we move to number 29 on the list, which is WrestleMania 11 from 1995. Just to get into some of the good, to kind of get this out of the way, because there's very few good things.
This will be brief.
Shawn Michaels and Diesel is a good match. Shawn puts in a real strong effort there. Bam Bam and LT was also, considering what it could have been, was actually, again, very good effort from Bam Bam to make it work. The production, the presentation of the whole thing with the All-Pro team, they made it seem like it was a big deal in its own little bubble. Salt and Pepper doing the intros was fine. Now that's out the way, let's talk about the bad, because there's plenty of it. The production on this show is absolutely beyond belief. Audio problems for the first half of the show. The building, the Hartford Civic Center, with empty red seats dotted throughout that you can see, is just not looking good. We mentioned before with Bret Hart losing and the burial of Bret Hart as being the major kind of factor that made me rank 9 bad, because it was such a detriment to the product. Not a detriment to the product overall, but the decision to have Bam Bam Bigelow lose to Lawrence Taylor pretty much killed his career dead. He was out of the company by the end of the year. It did not do well for the future going forward. I think it hurt Diesel. We mentioned Kevin Nash quite a lot in last week's trial, but the way Shawn Michaels wrestled in this match pretty much is the babyface, getting a visionary fall over Diesel with a super kick, and it's like he would have won the belt. He's 6 foot tall, cocky, workhorse heel against the tall babyface who should destroy this guy, and it didn't happen, and it made Diesel look bad, hurt him for the rest of the year. In terms of long-range vision for the rest of the year too, no heels were put over with any key importance on this show, barring Yokozuna and Owen Hart. It set up a year of no hot heels, with Sid and Mabel main events as a result. The undercard absolutely sucks balls on this show. Taker Bundy. The Allied Powers versus the Blue Brothers, which the fact that Harris Boys got in WrestleMania pains me to some degree. And the match that Bret Hart calls his worst big match ever against Bob Backlund, with Roddy Piper howling like a retard the entire time. I just did not like this show. It comes off like the most Bush League WrestleMania, I think, of all time.
Yeah, I agree. And the circumstances around Diesel and Shawn, this might be, if I actually did a list, this would really push 9 close as the worst. Void of a roster that's, and void of any steam behind the product, really. It's the dynamic of Diesel as the face, Shawn as the heel. Fucking retarded.
Yeah, it didn't work. Even with Sid at ringside.
The only way to redeem that would be, was there any plan at that point to use it as a launch pad to turn Shawn face?
I think they knew. I think they did know, because I think they probably saw trajectory-wise, once this is happening, once it's over, where do you go? Because, I mean, I think that was the reason why they had Shawn look so good, was because they were kind of thinking that direction anyway.
Well, didn't they? They effectively turned Shawn babyface the next night on Raw, because Sid powerbombed him 3 times.
Yeah, they weren't the best powerbombs, but they did the turn.
Well, yeah.
Yes, I mean, so you'd assume they had it lined up. So, I mean, that's like a slight silver line. I mean, to have
the fact that he won the Rumble in such a manner, how can you expect him to knock him off like a babyface?
Exactly.
You know what? Because this 11, I said it is down there. I think it's when people always use the Shawn Michaels Diesel match as a way of like, this is not as bad as some other choices. I'll be honest with you, I don't think that match is as good as most people say it is.
No one's calling it a classic. Around this table, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I think it's a good match.
It's a better match than anything on 9.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's better than anything that's on 9, as you're right, and it's better than anything else that was on 11. And you were saying about with Sid as well. I mean, even during the match, the crowd were chanting for Sid.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to interfere in the match. It's just like, I don't think it's much of a lifeboat to cling to to try and give any positives to the show.
I think you're getting a bit ahead of yourself. I don't think anyone is sort of waxing lyrical about the Michaels Diesel match. That's why it's either second bottom on the list or
rock bottom.
I don't think people are getting too great about it. They're just saying that's, you know, if you're going to point to something and say that was okay, that's what you would point at, because you can't point at anything else. As you said before, Liam, it's a real piss poor venue, the Hartford Shopping Centre. technical problems from the get go. You've got JR trying to do a post match interview with the Blue Brothers that you can't see because they're just covered in pitch black because they've got the Allied Powers lighting gimmick going. You've got Nicholas Totoro, who can't speak on the microphone because it hasn't been picked up properly. You know, I'm assuming, you know, just picks up Nicholas Turturro investigates as he searches for Pamela Anderson. I can only assume that Jimmy Smits and Dennis Franz were busy that night. And in terms of the celebrities, you've got Turturro, you've got Jonathan Taylor Thomas playing chess with Bob Backlund, you know, Pamela Anderson, Jenny McCarthy, who at that point is just an MTV presenter, which means nothing in the grand scheme of things. And I'll just say for the record, I do not like salt and pepper.
No.
I don't like it as a condiment with a meal, and I don't like it as a performance artist.
You don't like them in your wrestling main event.
I just don't like it, full stop. But it's a terrible card.
Tell us how you really feel, Carl.
And when, like you say, when Bret Hart describes a match on this card as the worst match of his career, I think that's pretty much the nail in the coffin for the show.
I think it's pretty funny because watching that match back, you can just see visibly in Bret's face, he looks so angry when Piper's screaming, what do you say? It's like you can just see him in his eyes. It's like, I'm going to chin you, Piper, if you keep doing this.
It's also just fucking dead most of the time. Like, the crowd react to the entrances of the wrestlers that they like, and they react to the finishers. But beyond that, during the actual matches themselves, until really to the last two, really, it's just absolute dead silence.
And I can't stress enough just how bad Taker and Bundy was.
Oh, hideous. This is, you know, going through from Mania 9 to 11, you see sort of the real trough that Taker was stuck in at this point before Foley turns up. I may have mentioned that in the past. But on the subject of the crowd again, you've got to remember, this is Connecticut. Hartford, Connecticut. It's not some hotbed like Memphis or Florida was in Eddie Graham's peak. This was billed as the WrestleMania is coming home. Well, they came to the door and everyone pretended they were out.
getting to the feedback here, because this may have been the most maligned WrestleMania in the feedback. Yeah. Hughes Meister from F4W Online. 11 is the worst and it isn't even close. Ivan Butterfly from F4W Online. Mania 11 will always be the worst. That Bret Hart back on match was a disgrace, and don't get me started on Taker Bundy. Did I mention that sucked, by the way? Matt Bro, 1984 from the UK Fan Forum, says, for me, WrestleMania 11 has got to be considered the worst by some distance, not just in terms of underwhelming spectacle and rubbish match quality, but also in the context of what preceded and followed it. It felt so utterly small time and shit. WrestleMania 11 in front of what looks like about 5,000 mute people, those crap disco lights, a desperate feeling attempt to garner interest with celebrities, the show closing with a non-wrestler beating one of the company's top heels, just encapsulated the awful mid-90s WWF, taking what were almost its dying breaths. Unbelievable! A new generation bollocks was everywhere. Watching 11 as a kid was definitely the moment I realised that wrestling wasn't in anymore, and definitely not as good as a few years prior. I don't think I picked up interest again properly until late 97. Watching it as an adult, you appreciate what a miracle it is that Vince not only stayed in business but turned around things so massively within 3 or 4 years. Malachi from the Wrestling Forum says, my vote for the worst goes to WrestleMania 11 for the simple fact that the Bigelow LT match main evented. That alone puts it at the top or bottom in this case. I'm glad they learned their lesson and saved the main events for real wrestlers. If not, we'd have probably had Sho and Akebono headline 21, the 10-year anniversary of this fiasco. Ian Drew Dice Clay from the UK Fan Forum says, WrestleMania 11 was even shit when I was a kid. LT vs Bam Bam is great in terms of appreciating how well Bam Bam did to carry a non-worker, but as a child, my idea of a football star was if Teddy Sheringham was fighting Bam Bam Bigelow. No idea who the fuck LT was at the time, and I didn't care. Diesel vs. Shawn was good, but the rest ranged from passable to dull as fuck. Most of these matches came off like a modern-day episode of Raw, where stuff is built for later down the road. I was just watching 95-era superstars around the build to this, and the lack of interest going in from everyone who wasn't Vince McMahon is hilarious. Vince is all over the dick of the celebrities, rarely even mentions the other wrestlers on the show. All I thought watching is that in 1994, Vince's trial had ended and the company was rattled on its ass. So this was the first post-scandal WrestleMania. So it's kind of like a reboot from the first. They just filled it with celebrities. Jenny McCarthy, that little tosser from Home Improvement, Salt and Pepper, Nick Turturro, a load of NFL players. They even wheeled out, not literally, but maybe off-screen, a special Olympian to sing the national anthem. Sort of a highlight about how out of touch Vince was in 95, because nothing on this show represented why wrestling became massive some 18 months later. Oh, and one last thing. The entrance competitors for the Million Dollar Corporation are amazing. Most of them were old, fat, and broken down in 95, so seeing them run to the ring like they were entering the field of play is hilarious. Volkov, Bundy, and DiBiase especially look knackered afterwards. We've got more here burying the show. CTX Russo Mark from the UK fan forum. WrestleMania 11 was the first show I ever remember thinking of as a bad show. I'd only recently started forming the idea of bad wrestling in my head at the time. Taker versus Taker and the Rumble 95 stand out in particular as being two matches I was disappointed in a few months earlier. Before then, I'd never even really considered good and bad. Wrestling was wrestling and it was all awesome to my little head, but then came WrestleMania 11 and it was such a steaming pile of shit that for years I would name it as my least favourite show of all time. Way worse than WrestleMania 9, which at least had a bit of fun about it.
To go on the feedback of the emails, I forget his name and I apologise, but one of them summed it up very nicely there about Vince and his obsession with the celebrities as the build-up. Because you see that from the show open, it's the build. It's I'm paraphrasing it, but it's something along the lines of, it's WrestleMania 11 with Pamela Anderson, with Jenny McCarthy, with Nicholas Totoro, with Jonathan Taylor Thomas. They don't reference the wrestlers. Yeah, they appear alongside them, but they reference these B-listers, and it just sort of, it sums up the build to that Mania perfectly.
No stars, so let's advertise the ones we've hired temporarily, I guess. You
know. Yeah, pretty much. Moving along now to number 28 on the list. We are going back to 1988 and WrestleMania 4. A lot of different things about this show strike me as a reason to hold this pretty low. We're getting out of the depths now, in my opinion, in the sense that 9 and 11 to me had something, like I said, that was offensive on this show. WrestleMania 4 does have some things going for it in the sense of, and this is kind of a bit of a broad statement to make, but between 3 and 6, there's a certain nostalgia surrounding this era of WrestleManias that I think people have a bit of a fondness for, and they kind of look at it through different eyes. I'm nostalgic for it too, don't get me wrong. It's kind of iconic. It's the tournament's a one-off thing. Jesse and Gorilla I really, really enjoy on this show, and the booking was pretty much perfectly in line with what the company needed at the time. So unlike 9 and 11, where you can point to the booking and just say, this was not what it should have been. 4, I think, is kind of the opposite in that sense. And they needed Savage on top. Hogan was going away to film No Holds Barred. So, Savage was the right guy to be put over. And obviously, it sets up WrestleMania 5, which was a fantastic storyline. The cons of this show and the reason why it has to be rated this low for me is that it's absolutely dull as fuck.
Oh, God, yeah.
There are no good matches on this show. 16 of them.
And I thought you said 16 hours long.
It went 4 hours. It felt like 8. I think I had a birthday in the middle of the show. Jake and Rude is awful. Andre and Hogan is terrible. Beefcake Honky sucks. And again, there's too many matches. For matches that were so short, how it was still plodding, I have absolutely no idea. The dead crowd really does a number on this show as well. If it was in front of a more lively crowd who reacted to the guys like superstars, it may have been a little bit more passable because it would have had some life. It drags so bad because not only is there nothing good to watch on this show, but there's no interest anywhere else anyway. There's somebody who wrote in feedback, and I didn't take his name unfortunately, that said 4 gets a bad rap because of the time it was held in, which I completely disagree with, because on the other channel at the same time, the first Clash of the Champions was on the air, which was an awesome show, still holds up today as an awesome show, and absolutely kicks WrestleMania 4's ass. So I'll throw this over to the panel now, designated fairly low here, because I just see absolutely nothing of merit.
I think the... yeah, absolutely right. The redeeming feature, as you said, is the significance and the premise of the show. The premise of it is complete 182... WrestleMania 11, say, the purpose direction, but god damn, it's such a long, boring show with nothing good. I think you mentioned in your article about the crowd after Hogan and Andre.
Oh, they just fall off a cliff.
Yeah. Well, it's like they're on the poster, then they're eliminated together.
Yeah, sure.
It's like, come on.
And as much as this may kind of be a sour note, there was such a huge leap from Hulk Hogan to anybody else in terms of true star power. That was a crowd. They didn't seem like a very wrestling-centric crowd. They weren't super knowledgeable. Hogan was the star that brought them in many cases. Hogan was the feature attraction. As soon as he was gone, a lot of these... you get the sense almost that this is a crowd. They're there because of the WWF and Hulk Hogan, and they're just kind of sitting there watching the rest of the roster that they don't really have an emotional attachment to. Just... go through the motions and phone it in a lot of cases.
And there are like a billion guys on the show as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, get over, guys. The Hogan Andre thing as well, it's like, we know, it goes without saying why they didn't, but Hogan's leaving. Nice to maybe give him a reason to write him out, a better reason, get some heat on him for someone. maybe a challenger for Savage. Not a fan. So yeah, apart from the significance and nostalgia value, it's a really bad show from top to bottom. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
It's just like I said, there's nothing offensive, but it is just dull as dishwater. And it's worth remembering that in addition to the tournament, which is held by a company that's never done tournaments well, let's get that straight, there's also a battle royal to start the show. And as we all know, battle royals are the shits. Always have been, always will be. There are some incredibly dull matches that you reference there. Jake and Rude in particular is so boring. So boring. For anyone who had the VHS of this on the old Silvervision Coliseum home video collection, it went over two cassettes. That's just how long it was. just sort of really hammers the point home about this is a long show. You better hunker down with some resources for this thing because you're going to need them. And it's during a period of manias in general where the cards are bloated.
That's kind of a theme that's always been there, isn't it? But, I guess it's the beginning of the payday of the big yearly payday. They feel they have to get as many guys on as possible. And it's something that's never gone away, and it hurts Mania so much in my eyes. But I understand why they do it. But
in many respects, it's almost worse now in the sense that they tried to cram everyone on the show and then almost dedicate a whole hour to one side of no wrestling on Manias these days. But yeah. I guess this is a clear sign of them getting everyone on for the payday, but it just means there's far too much. There's no chance for the audience to breathe either, to take anything in that they may have enjoyed. They're not going to find it on this show, but just as a general philosophical point, as nice as it is to see Savage get his moment, I've always held it personally against this company that in this tournament where they teased it on TV, and they teased it during the show, they robbed us of Savage Steamboat in the tournament.
Yeah.
Because God knows old Mr. 15 minutes to warm up Greg Valentine had to go over Ricky Steamboat.
A real fuck you out the door to Steamboat, and this was his last appearance.
Screw you, Vince, you bastard.
Yeah, four's quite a tricky one because for me anyway, because it's kind of like it's hard for me to bash the show completely because it was like the Macho Man story, but at the same time it's quite tricky to defend it as well, so it kind of begrudgingly for me is in that lower section. It's still I had it somewhere in the midpoint in this bottom 10. I strangely enough, I didn't see this till way after, so I'd already kind of seen like 7, 8 and 6 and 5 and so on, and I didn't realize that Savage had won the title in that way, or that he won it at Mania and that he won it as a babyface. I had no idea, so I absolutely marked out when I first saw it. I was like, yeah, screaming at my mom going, Savage won the title, and she was like, when? And like, five years ago, it's beyond Savage's personal story of his group of matches, which I thought were pretty well done. Savage is coming out to different outfits and so on, which is just class. It was just weird. I remember looking at the brackets and thinking like, this could actually be a really good show where you can get certain things, like you were mentioning, like with Savage and Steamboat and so on. Like there are other like people within the brackets where you're looking like, oh, there's some good matches that can happen here, and then like none of them happened because they either like got counted out or went to a time limit draw, like with Rude and Jake or whatever, and you were just kind of like left with like one man gang getting a buy through into like one of the rounds and so on. It was just a complete mess apart from that individual Savage storyline, which you could actually follow because he was the only guy that actually wrestled all four rounds. The location, Trump Plaza, was a problem. And it was going to be a problem for the next Mania as well, even though I do personally like that Mania. I think the tournament aspect to crown a new champion after the storyline that they did with Andre winning,
which was
the
phenomenal.
Title, Andre wins the title, sells it to DiBiase. That great heat for DiBiase and Andre. If they did it kind of like similar to like King of the Ring, where it's just like quarterfinal, semis, and then the main final, it would have run a lot better, because then you could have done like a bye, one bye here or there, whatever, or a couple of quick finishes in the first rounds, and got through the tournament a lot faster with key people who you actually want to see challenge for the title. You have Hogan, Savage, Andre, DiBiase. It's a lot better than what they did. Do the first round on TV, then do quarters, semi, and main on the main show. So that way you're actually using a part of the tournament, at least the qualifying round,
to advertise
the rest of the show and saying, look who's got through, watch to find out who wins. It was just like a concept that could be done, and actually still could be done, but they just didn't do it right completely, and because of that you get this slow, boring show.
Just to get into the feedback here, M4A from Pro Wrestling Only: I find 4 to be the hardest to sit through and the most lacking in any kind of dynamic action. Baz TNM from the UK fan forum says, I'd probably switch your last 3 around here. 9 is okay, not great, but not completely terrible either. 11 has some good matches. 4 really drags on, but has some historical significance with the Macho Man getting the gold, but it is a toughie. I'd probably put 4 at the very bottom because I can't think of any decent matches on that event. Bad News Gurner from the TPWW forum says, 4 was atrocious. Too long, dead crowd, and the majority of the matches were like 5 minutes long. Nitro 2 from the Wrestling Forum says, Mania 4 is underrated. It didn't have a lot of great matches, but there was some cool stuff. Macho Man winning the tournament, the demolition match, Bobby Heenan's outfit, and the six-man with the Islanders was good. Also, Bret Hart getting double-crossed in the Battle Royal. Listeners Monsoon says, don't ever double-cross the Hitman. Talk about foreshadowing. Plus, any WrestleMania with Monsoon and Jesse is worth the money. They kill today's announcers. I do think that Jesse and Gorilla are awesome on this show. Jesse was just awesome. Oh. Always. And again, it goes into that kind of nostalgia around this period of time where you associate these good elements and the fact that, you know, wrestling was popular. And I think that's part of what that nostalgia run, like I said, is. People having fond feelings about WrestleMania that took place during the hot period of time.
But it's just, without wanting to be sort of too philosophical about it, it's because a lot of people remember it, this Mania, as a child, if you like, and you're more easily pleased, and you do have that more sort of positive view, if you like. You know, we may not have all seen it at the time. In fact, I dare say everyone around this table didn't see it at the time that it happened, but we all saw it through the eyes of a child, almost. Yeah. You know, I was still very young when I saw it. So you are sort of easier to please, if you like. So I think that's where that nostalgia comes from, whereas now we're a bit more cynical, a bit more critical. Just on a side note, because I didn't mention these other atrocious matches, and I don't think Liam did either, the tournament also includes a horrific Dino Bravo versus The Rock Don Morocco match, which ends in a nonsensical DQ. You have the burial of Bigelow not long before he's on his way out the door.
That's bad.
Because, you know, an horrific Ultimate Warrior versus Hercules Hernandez match, which is not part of the tournament, but they felt we needed to be treated with it anyway.
It is a very, very bad match.
The nostalgia thing is interesting for me because it's like it helps shows in one respect, because first of all, there's less shows, they're more memorable from those, you know, say up to 20, I think, probably. But obviously you're viewing with modern eyes, so the in-ring, it's, you know, it's got that working against it, so we're going to be a little unfair. So I think that it swings and roundabouts in terms of how nostalgia affects your reviewing of a show, because, you know, there are pros and cons, I think, to that.
So you'd say it's sort of it's difficult to detach yourself from the moment, sort of thing.
It's pros and cons. There are variables which are affected by nostalgia. Law of diminishing returns in terms of relationship, because, you know, when we get to the mid-20s, what show was that match on, kind of thing? That's not because they were bad shows. A lot of those were good shows, but you've got the law of diminishing returns because we've had 25 previous, and it's, you know, how you can remember. It's a lot easier to remember what happened on all the WrestleManias when you've only had 4. Or 10 or whatever.
Moving on to number 27 in this list, we're going back to 1986 here for WrestleMania 2, a show that had many things to not like all that much. People are getting riled up around the table right now. I'll get right now to the things that I thought were good, because so far, like I said, there's very little of any merit in these WrestleManias in terms of a real thing of substance that's great. I do love the Dream Team Bulldogs match on this show. I think that the Terry Funk and Hoss Funk against JYD and Tito Santana is one of the more underrated matches in WrestleMania history, and I think that it probably should have been the one that I picked when we were talking about this on the Christmas show for underrated WrestleMania matches, because it's a one-man show from Terry Funk as far as I'm concerned, but it's a great one-man show. But again, talking about the negatives, we talked about bad production on WrestleMania 11. It's atrocious here. It's really, really bad. King Kong Bundy is the main event. I never got into Bundy. Maybe it's because he's, and I said this in the article on steelchair.co.uk, about how he's sandwiched between Piper and Andre, two white hot heels who did huge business. Bundy just never did it for me as a challenger. The good workers that are on this show feel wasted to me. Adonis, with Uncle Elmer, Randy Savage with George Steele, Steamboat with Hercules, which isn't like a terrible match by any means, but these are the guys that would make Mania 3. And they're doing very little of real value here at WrestleMania 2. The boxing match speaks for itself. There's a lot of bad on this card. The commentary. You think that fucking Booker T and JBL and Michael Cole have got it rough now? Susan St. James Elvira, Kathy Lee Crosby. Again, the whole three locations thing was the novelty they were going with here as a response to Crockett doing two. Yeah, it's like, oh, well, we're going to outdo you, but it just looks so ugly. It looks ugly, the show's ugly, and apart from those two tag matches, which I like, there's nothing on this show that does it for me at all.
Yeah, it as a show to watch back, it still has that sort of almost grainy quality, if you like, in terms of production. It doesn't hold up well. The fact that it was all, the premise of it all, if you like, was just for Vince to show that he could do it better than the NWA could. That's what it really boiled down to. It really did hurt the show. You mentioned there about the breakup of the commentary teams, and it is awful, though, the way Monsoon shuts down Kathy Lee Crosby is fantastic. Yeah. You know, there's only so many times you want to hear about how her grandfather talked about I'm cracking up now just thinking of it. But Monsoon is great, the way he just shuts her down. I can't even finish the sentence. It's just brilliant. But it, you know, Ventura has to carry the Los Angeles portion. Gene Okerlund on commentary is not something to crow about at any stage. The reason I sort of pulled the contorted face when you mentioned this one is solely because it's the first one where I disagreed with you. I have it ranked slightly higher.
Okay.
But
based on the merit of this show or based on deficiencies in others?
The two tag matches are the reason that I base it slightly higher, because I do love both matches. Okay. And I am a complete mark for the Bulldogs. And it was a time in general, that sort of 80s period, where I thought the tag division had real strength. And when you compare it to now, it just sort of pains me to look at the two periods in time. But those two matches put it above another Mania for me. But all the faults that you reference there, I can't argue with at all.
I respect the fact that you're going to pick those two matches out, and hey, I'm a Terry Funk fan as much as the next person, and the Bulldogs match is fantastic as well. But for me personally, I fucking hate this show. This is, for me, the very bottom.
Really? This is your number 30?
This is the deuce, okay? This is the deuce at the bottom of the pile, okay? The rest of it is so bad, even with those two good points there, it just outweighs it.
It brings the weight down.
Yeah, it's the quality of the bad on this, which is where the bad in WrestleMania 2 for me is worse than the bad in WrestleMania 11, even if there are pros to it. If you like those two matches and the show because of that, fair play to you.
I never said I like the show. I just said I had it ranked higher.
Split in between the three shows didn't work smoothly at all. It looked like it was a bunch of monkeys working this show. It was just horrible. And then the real thing that you just put in there with the commentary team,
yeah,
with the freaking commentary team, with Vince McMahon, and what's her name?
Susan St. James.
Yeah, she's just like absolutely fucking useless, and you can just like, almost tell. I don't even think they were sitting in the commentary position. You could just tell like they were lying on a bed shaped like a heart, as Vince was just trying to woo her, slowly stroking her leg as she was talking. I can't stand it, and it's why it's on the bottom for me.
I agree. Two is not a good show, but it has two good matches. And that's at least one more than WrestleMania 9 has.
That's good maths. Yeah, like I said, I absolutely hated the three venues. Just, I remember when you got the videotapes and we were like, okay, in this venue and fucking nothing happens, and I think I'll get to the next one and nothing happens. And Hogan and Bundy, no interest whatsoever for me. I was just looking at going through Dave Meltzer's star ratings for this, which is quite amusing. We've got Orndorff Morocco dud,
which the crowd in New York evidently agreed with as they ended it with a bullshit chant.
Savage Steel 1 star,
and that's lucky.
Jake Roberts, Orson Welles. It says George Welles, but I'm going with Orson Welles. they got two, so that's actually like
really
that's pretty yeah as high yeah. as yeah
as high than I give it. That's for
yeah.
Sure.
Piper and T -5.
What the fuck is that?
I don't know what he was on that. Mueller and Velvet McIntyre dud.
That's
awful. Kirshner and Volkov dud. A 20-man battle royal. Well, who cares? 20-man battle royal.
With the Refrigerator Perry looking like a fucking megastar with that gut hanging out, by the
yeah,
way.
And
Pedro Morales is in there. Or?
Yeah, and coincidentally, Bruno. It comes off the back of the Super Bowl winning Bears team.
Yep.
And Chicago doesn't sell out for this portion of WrestleMania.
I am in agreement. I see both of you, really, Carl and G. I mean, I really do hate this show. But you got two matches in there.
Okay, fair enough. Get into what you think. Kayfabe 1984 from Pro Wrestling Only says, this is in my bottom two. The first half was dreadful, but from the Football Players Battle Royal, things did pick up a little bit. Also, Susan St. James on commentary, please no. Omega 919 from F4W, the Bulldogs Dream Team, Steamboat versus Hercules, and JYD Santana versus the Funks puts two ahead of 1, 4, and 11 for me. I'm guessing for the exact same reasons that you just mentioned. Moving along here to the next one on the list, number 26, we're at the same time period, 1 year before the very first WrestleMania 1985. This is a really tough one to rank, I find, and this is actually one of the ones I kind of wavered on, because in terms of historical significance, this kind of pretty much blows away the field. The hype was pretty tremendous. There was a guy, there was a YouTube channel originally, I think, called Mania 1 Hype or something like that. I'm not sure if it's up anymore, but if it is, go and find it, because it's pretty much all of Roddy Piper's promos and all of Hogan and Mr. T's public appearances, kind of a thing, leading up to this show.
Does that include Richard Belzer?
It does indeed, the Richard Belzer incident. And it was just amazing, because you get to see this awesome final week of Bill. Piper was just in an absolute league of his own. I enjoy the main event here. It's novelty. It's just everything that it is. It's fun. Hogan's good here. He's in his element as a babyface in MSG. That's pretty much, in terms of the rest of the show, that's pretty much all you got going for it. The main event was the best thing on this show. Everything else, the other key matches on this show, blew. Andre and Stud is not good at all. Mulu and Richter is shocking as well. Production at this point, it seems unfair somewhat to label 1 and 2 with this kind of brush of bad production, because this really was the period before the Dick Ebersold influence, where he really did upgrade things significantly. And Mania 1, you got, like, you know, Lord Alfred Hayes at ringside, and there's guys in previous matches walking around in the background, and it's just that kind of sloppiness that things would really be tightened up as these mega shows became more commonplace that Vince would do. A whole lot of nothing elsewhere on the undercard. Guys who were good were stuck in throwaways. I've heard it said before that this is considered a glorified house show with a celebrity main event, and I can't really disagree with that too much. There's not, like I said before, yeah, this is the final show that I would consider an F-grade WrestleMania. Because, again, very little of merit in terms of all-time great. I consider it the best of this bad bunch just because of the hype in the build.
In my head, I've got this one just above number two, and I feel probably I am being harsh to it, but I can't connect to it. I know the history, and you picked up on the pros of it. Was the build up was great with the rock and wrestling connection, whatever
score. Everything was great. The momentum was there, and so much was riding on the show, and it delivered for its key purpose. Yeah,
absolutely, that's one key point. Two, Madison Square Garden, always going to be a pro. And three, the actual match delivered in the end is that, you know, Hogan looks like a star. Mr. T actually was a star at that time, not for much longer, but he was one at that time. Orndorff did his job well. Roddy Piper, as you said, stole the show. Yeah. He was the best thing on it. Even Bob Orton was great at ringside. Yeah. And you got all that. I think you probably get even more enjoyment from one if you actually know the story of the show. And it just, that match is really heated. I mean, they're really going for it there. But the rest of the show, as you said, I mean, you talked about Big John Studd Giant was just poor, and it always was going to be poor. Feels like these two aren't the proper first Manias.
I've heard a lot of people say Mania starts with three.
Yes.
Throughout the course of the feedback. Here.
Absolutely. They just feel like test runs, and that three was where Mania actually began. That's why one and two are my bottom two, because they just don't feel like WrestleManias to me.
I think if you was experienced them at the time, you probably wouldn't say that.
Yeah, probably would.
Yeah. This is the one for me. How do you review what?
How do you weight the different elements?
Yeah, exactly. How do you weight this? Because in ring, this is an F grade show.
Yeah. Not even as good as two with the two. At least you get two good
two,
matches.
Exactly. But that, I mean, goddamn though, it's so important.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
vital.
Important. It's the world we know is a different place.
If this bombs.
No WrestleMania. Yeah, if he goes out of business, he's selling, I don't know, what Vince McMahon's doing.
Selling meat in the truck in Minneapolis.
But goddamn, there's a lot of shit on the show as well. To give it an F, that's harsh. But at the same time, I'm flipping backwards and forwards. We're putting different values on the show.
Yeah, that's the
flip backwards and forwards. So.
This is the problem with coming up with a list in the first season. I thought this would be interesting to do, and to get this kind of discussion going, because to me, one and two, they do kind of feel similar in a sense. Two, I put it below because of how important one is. At the same time, when it went like, in a bit of clarity's sake, on the actual article on steelchair.co.uk, I gave these shows grades, and I put WrestleMania 1 at the top of the F grade section, just because to me, I can't justify calling it anything other than a bad show. But of the bad shows, this is by far the most important.
So if you saw it at the time, would you consider it a bad show? That's, I think that's,
yeah.
That's
it always depends what I've just seen it with anyway.
The card isn't particularly good. I don't think it would improve my enjoyment that much if I looked at how Vince went through what he went through, because I don't really factor that in when I'm watching a show for enjoyment. I think that's too cerebral for me. I completely understand the importance of the show for Vince as an individual and for that company's survival. That being said, I think it's overstated somewhat, and that's not by us as individuals. I think it's overstated more so by the company, in the sense that, and bear with me this, because I understand this is a little bit off the beaten track, but in the sense of, if you listen to the company, they had WrestleMania 1, it was an unqualified success, and that was it then. They were the national brand that dominated North America and were going to dominate the world. And that's not really true, is it? 85 was significant. WrestleMania 1 and 85 was significant for the company's growth. It was significant in terms of the WrestleMania brand and later years. But in 1985, even after the success of WrestleMania 1, they could still go into Mid-South and get crushed. They could still go into the Southeast and the Carolinas and get crushed in comparison to other companies. So it wasn't quite that all-conquering move that Vince likes to make it out to be. That is why I think that a Mania just a little further down the road is more significant, and obviously we'll get to that at another time.
We move along now to the first of the WrestleManias that I gave a D grade in my article, and that is number 25, WrestleMania 15 from 1999. And this, I make no bones about it, even though I gave it a higher letter, this is still a putrid show. The bottom of this barrel, if you will. Put here exclusively, in my opinion, because Austin Rock, I felt, was completely on the money on this show. The last 30 minutes of this show are really fun viewing, between the Shawn Michaels promo, between Austin and Rock, the post-match too, which is really, really fun. It's all about Austin and Rock during this period of time. Austin is red hot, maybe is his peak here as a babyface. Rock maybe artistically at his peak as a heel. You know, put perfect timing. They were so hot. They were the two hot stars in wrestling at the time. That, unfortunately, caps off one of the worst WrestleManias of all time, because the undercard of this show is absolutely deplorable and really emblematic of how bad the mid-card in 1999 really was. The worst Hell in a Cell match of all time, the one they never reference ever again. Sable Torrey, D'Lo and Test as a makeshift team to go against Owen Hart and Jeff Jarrett, a match that nobody could possibly care about. Big Show Mick Foley, which I think was built the week of the show as well. It was another one that was made very, very late in the game. The decision to switch the Outlaws from the matches that they've been built up to for months and put in Road Dogg in the IC title match, Billy Gunn in the Hardcore title match, was something where you built people's expectations up for one way just to sweep them into the other. You can make a claim that Pac and Shane is a good match, and it's perfectly fine for what it is. Carl, you made a comment on the best and worst Royal Rumble pay-per-views about the Rumble 99, how Vince Russo molested that show. That is a massive part of why I hate this show, is the booking of it. The undercard, I don't even mention the fact that Butterbean kills Bart Gunn to death, if you will. Big Show turns 1 month after being in the company, of course. China turning babyface, which turns Kane face by proxy when China and Triple H turn heel later in the show. The Boss Man gets hanged. You look at this show and
don't forget, the Boss Man gets hanged, and then 10 seconds later, whilst he's still hanging in the ring, we cut away to the WrestleMania Rage Party.
And Vincent Mann doing his impression of a peacock, which is just absolutely fantastic.
It's a complete one-match show. The last half an hour of it is pretty damn good stuff. The fact that Foley and Big Show are wrestling to be the special referee in that main event speaks further to that it is all about Austin Rock. And this is a time where, if you look back at 99 as a whole, we don't want to go too far down this road, I don't know, but if you look at 99 as a whole, it's usually all about Austin or all about Rock, and the mid-card in general, it doesn't hold up well today when you look back at it. I was hoping you weren't going to mention Russo before I had a chance to jump in there, because I was going to try and be clever about some certain individual's fingerprints possibly being over this, but yeah, it just completely screams
shit-stained fingerprints.
Oh, it's like the bloody palm on the wall just scraping down. Shane and X-Pac is better than I expected it to be going in. I actually did love seeing Butterbean kill Bartgun. I enjoyed that immensely, just because it was almost a slap in the face to the arrogance of Vince, if you like, as the old we've done the Brawl for All, which was a terrible concept which hurt half our roster and none of the fans really enjoyed.
The one guy that came out looking good.
But we're going to take Bartgun because he won it and looked good in the process, and we're so confident we're actually going to put him in there with, as much as he may be auditioning for a role as the whale in Moby Dick, Butterbean is still an actual professional boxer. And it just completely blew up in Vince's face. Poor show, but with a very bright ending, which is exactly what the fans wanted. So for that reason, it sort of gets above that bottom five for me, if you
yeah,
like.
Yeah, because the build was all about Austin Rock anyway. If that's what you're paying for, that did deliver. And they would have better matches, but to me, this one was on the mark.
This, how you grade the show, is completely how much stock you put into that main event. And goddamn, that undercard was so weak.
Oh, yeah.
And with the Russo effect, you can't rate it. I think you're a little harsh, maybe. I don't know. You've been at a D still. It's the highest of your Ds, I think, is it?
Well, yeah, lowest, highest, whichever one you would say.
Yeah, whatever. I don't know if you can justify moving it higher when you compare it match for match with other shows. See, this is, I'm sure a lot of listeners are going to, this is going to be quite nostalgic for them as well, given the time frame. But I think we knew at the time the undercard was weak as well. So it was not like it was fantastic fun times at the time.
No,
either, so.
It's not. This is not retrospective analysis here, saying, oh, well, I'm looking back now, these matches really were just awful. At the time, it didn't feel, with the exception of the main event, it doesn't feel like a WrestleMania, which I think is the biggest criticism you could probably give any of these shows during this period of time.
Yeah, because it is, it all just smacked of being thrown together, and it was a case of, it doesn't matter, because this is our main event, and this is what the people are coming to see.
I'm not sure if that's, an indictment, or
an endorsement.
Or an endorsement that, that it's the one-match show. I can't...
It's difficult, isn't it? Yeah. Which speaks to your earlier point of, it's difficult when you're drawing up this list because you are subjective in the sense of the things you remember fondly. And it is that trade-off of how much stock do you put in one match to sort of bump the shows of WrestleMania further up your list? How much stock do you put in the wider card? Is the wider card enough to take away from how good that one match was? So, it's that trade-off, isn't it? It's really difficult.
Yeah, especially when you've got one match. It's also the main event with the stars as well. So, I mean, it's pretty... The rest of it is dross, so... it's hard to prop it up too much, to be honest.
I kind of like this show.
Oh, no!
And I'll explain why. I wouldn't have this in my bottom 10.
Oh, I think you got to.
Okay, it's in my middle 10. And the reason why is, this is going to be the first case for me where a certain essence of nostalgia starts to take effect with some of the choices. If I was to go by what your dynamic was for your list, I'll probably actually concede that I think your list is more than likely 100% right.
Yeah.
Okay, but for me personally, when I thought about what my list is, I went through more just the emotional context of just like, how did I feel watching this show? Does it still have an emotional connection to me when I watch it now? When I got back into wrestling in 99 and I was waiting for Royal Rumble 2000 to come on and I wanted to watch what the product had been before, I bought Royal Rumble 99 and WrestleMania 15. And so those were the shows I watched. And WrestleMania 15 is the second WrestleMania I've watched the most. Are they the best shows? No. Particularly with WrestleMania 15, I know that, but there's certain aspects of it which I enjoy. The Sable Torii was embarrassing, and I was actually watching that tape for the first time. My parents were in the same room as me, they were reading the paper, and when she cuts that promo at the beginning where she's like, are you ready for the grind? I cringed because I knew both my parents had dropped the newspapers and were watching the TV like, what the fuck are you watching? And I knew, like, if it was The Rock, I could defend this as being like, you should watch this too. But at this point, I was like, no, I can't defend this. And for a brief moment, I contemplated not watching wrestling again. Billy Gunn in the hardcore match, the fatal four-way for the Intercontinental, doesn't insult me at all. Am I going to defend him, say the great matches? No, but they don't insult me. The Shane McMahon X-Pac match, I actually really enjoy. I enjoy Shane McMahon's performance in that, and just like the little video and the Mean Street Posse at ringside.
I love the posse.
Yeah, those are little bits like here and there. Like whilst the match may not be a classic, there's like moments which I enjoy that keep me watching the show and keep that sense of nostalgia going. And to be honest to Bart Gunn, there's absolutely no shame at all if you shit and pissed yourself after you punched me in the face. Because honestly, if he punched me that way, I probably would have shit and pissed myself as well. Because it's just
but being punched you like that, I'd piss and shit myself.
Number 15 doesn't get me angry. It doesn't get me angry enough to warrant putting it in the bottom 10, because it still makes me laugh and smile.
Yeah, well, I think that's something that actually kind of goes to, like I said, a lot of those earlier ones too, the 4s, the 5s, the 6s, where people have their personal experiences that are going to stay with them forever. Just to see what you thought, Grimace from Pro Wrestling Only says, wow, 15 is way too high in my opinion. 15 is the worst by far. 100 hotshot angles, shitty short matches, China turns twice on the show, Bossman being hung, heck, two matches are devoid of heat because the titles changed hands 6 days before. Rock and Austin is a good match, but it is by far their worst big match. Fuck that show. Mad Dog from Pro Wrestling Only, I think 15 is by far the worst WrestleMania. You have a car that ultimately looked nothing like the build up to the show. They did that stupid hot shot with Road Dogg and Billy Gunn, which really screwed up the undercard. Nothing other than Austin Rock was good. At least 9 had a couple of decent matches. Loopy Date from TPWW Forum says, I just rewatched 15 the other day and have to agree. Swervermania was in full force that night. Very good main event. The rest was instantly forgettable. And Cox from Pro Wrestling Only says, I was at WrestleMania 15 and will vouch for it being one of the worst ever. It's also the night that poor Bart Gunn was mercilessly fed to Butterbean, which pretty much ruined my night.
Must have been a Smoking Guns fan.
That's the thing I Bart felt.
Moving along now, from WrestleMania 15 to number 24 on the list, WrestleMania 6 in 1990. This one's going to raise some ires in different directions. In terms of the pros on this show, I think it's pretty obvious. After a couple of bad ones at Trump Plaza, the feeling of the Sky Dome was quite cool. It's quite novel here. A return to that kind of big stadium show feel that we had at WrestleMania 3. Warrior and Hogan is a match that completely exceeded expectations. It is a very good match. There's a lot of nostalgia tied to this show based on the main event, and that really does carry it. Again, elements like Gorilla and Jesse on commentary do kind of bring this over. So people generally have very fond memories of 6. I've put this in this bottom section because with the exception of Warrior Hogan, which did exceed expectations and is a very good match, in my opinion, all the other big matches on the show completely fell short of the mark. You got matches that were advertised, like Jake and DiBiase, which was built up for, if I'm not mistaken, probably like a full year, because they teased it at WrestleMania 5, if I'm not mistaken, for a full year, and the match is so boring, the crowd does the Mexican wave. Yeah, Jake has a horrible WrestleMania record. It continues with this match here. Piper and Bad News, which was given a lot of time in the build-up, and is built up like it's going to be this wild brawl. It is nothing with another cheap finish. Everything else on this show is just kind of forgettable. It's either a disappointment or it's forgettable in the sense that you've got matches like Barbarian, Santana, Rude, Snooker.
Sorry, I didn't think you were finished.
Again, the story of this show to me is, again, much like WrestleMania 15, it's a one-match card. I don't think the bad on this show is as bad as the bad on 15. Nothing hits the lows of Sable, Torrey, and Take a Boss Man. But at the same time, everything is just so... It's just a big, long show of nothing to me until you get to the main event, because the things that you're supposed to be enticed by just gave you so little. And even little things like Beefcake being the guy to beat Mr. Perfect, which always stuck in my craw at the time. Again, one match show, it exceeded expectations, but I can't say much more for it than that. And I think as a result, there's very little else to sink your teeth into, and therefore it sits here at number 24.
I would add infuriating and frustrating to that as well, because we go back to the WrestleMania 3-esque showcase of it, you know, including the carts as well. They bring the carts back, which is a great addition. This was the last one that felt really big for quite a few years.
Yeah,
the main event was good, which is like a small miracle in itself. Let's not like exaggerate this. It was a basic match. It was a very simply put together match, executed as well as those two were going to be able to, and so hence it was a good entertaining match. The Toronto crowd obviously plays their part in it.
To me, it goes beyond being a good match because it was just such a perfect thrill ride of a match for that setting. You know, epic babyface wasn't done, and so this whole idea of this mega match and it being, you know, so many ups and downs, which we'll come to later on as a point of contention for me in ranking this.
Ventura, particularly on this night, is fantastic, even better than usual. He's actually one of the few highlights on this show, besides the main event. Obviously, personally insulted by Macho Man's being in a mixed tag match, and that's no offense to Dusty. Okay, I don't mind Dusty. Maybe if it was Dusty Macho Man on their own, it could have been a good match. But just in a mixed tag for the guy who main evented the year before, that Mania is just like the last one in Savage's kind of textbook of like his WrestleMania performances, and just anything else on that show. It's just poor, and the reason why it's so frustrating to me, and why this deserves to be in the bottom 10, is because the roster, if you go through some of the names, is actually a good roster. It's not poor by any stretch of the imagination. We're not looking at a WrestleMania 9 or an 11 here. They had enough great wrestlers that if you put them in the right order with the right people, this could have been an excellent, defining end of an era, end of the 80s period. We're in the 90s now. This is the action that you're going to get. It could have been a great show, but instead they put the wrong people together. It was a missed opportunity of a great show.
I just think as well, I mean, yeah, I agree with you, and people who have a nostalgic view and do enjoy the show, fine, but if you actually go through the show, if you actually go through the card, there is only one match. And it was a big deal, but I've never really loved it as much as other people, I don't think.
No.
And when you stack it up against, when you're actually compiling some kind of list, it's got to be low. That's the matter of the fact. We've gone through shows earlier already. We've actually had more better matches than this show had.
Oh, for sure.
So, I mean, no real argument for it being low, to be honest. That's all I've got to say about it.
Warrior Hogan, to me, doesn't hold up as well as, say, Hogan Savage was from the year before. That being said, I still think it's good, and I still think it's enjoyable to this day. I actually watched it back two or three days ago now. I forget which day it was, but I watched it recently. It was still enjoyable. I share G's frustration when it comes to sort of Dusty Savage. I think if that would have been a singles match, it would have been fine. There is a lot of dross on this undercard. You know, the use of the Hart Foundation in 30 seconds against the Bolsheviks. Yeah. You know, that's poor planning considering where they were. Duggan against Dino Bravo.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Earthquake against Hercules. The opener is Coco against Rick Martel. You know, just by saying these, I can see sort of the pain etched on faces around the table here. that it's just not good. You know, Rude, who is going on to be the number one contender against Warrior, is in a throwaway match against Jimmy Snuka. It's all that being said, don't forget the little throwaway with the Bolsheviks in the bathroom with Steve Allen. For anyone who remembers that, I know I do for some reason. You know, you've got Andre who can barely walk at this point. It's just a sad sight to see. He doesn't even tag in.
He does
in
get
it.
It's a nice moment. It's probably the highlight of the undercard, to be quite honest. It probably is the Andre.
And it's nice that he had that moment, but everything leading up to that is I find difficult to watch now. And it would be remiss of me, because no one around this table has mentioned it yet. We can't talk about Mania 6 without talking about the Roddy Piper paint job.
Oh, God, yeah. The Bad News Brown surprisingly didn't take kindly to.
Shocking, that.
Another reason why, again, we were talking about significance and placement in the build-up to the show and the fallout of it. This show, because the company, the way it is, it's a babyface territory anyway. When you have one mega babyface like you had Hogan, you've got to constantly create this new... this new glut of heels. When you had two mega baby faces, they scorched the earth with the heels, and they did no favours on this show either, with, again, Perfect losing, Savage losing, fucking DiBiase going to a shitty finish. It's like setting the landscape up for Warrior was so poor on this show, and we've gone into that separately as well. Just to move on to the feedback that we got here, because somebody did try and defend this show. It was Pat IRC from the UK Fan Forum says, "I can't understand why 6 rates so low. Is it because it's of its time? The match is by and large delivered away from the hype of the main event," which I think we've all done a yeoman's effort in terms of disagreeing with that, shall we say.
Respectfully disagree.
Moving down, 1 year previously to number 23 on the list, it's WrestleMania 5 from 1989. Again, another one that I think holds very fond memories, nostalgically speaking. The pros, the build-up. to the mega powers exploding is to me the real strength of this entire show. The 1 year deal with Savage and Hogan, the match itself is good. I do like the match, but the build up kind of speaks for itself and is one of the best, if not the best, 1 year build the company's ever done for a match. I do personally think that that Hogan and Warrior the year before is more of a thrill ride of a match, especially at the time, than Hogan and Savage's, which does have a sense of inevitability about it, which, not that that's a bad thing, but in terms of comparing things, in terms of excitement levels, I think Warrior and Hogan gets a slight nod there. But I give WrestleMania 5 the nod above 6 on the list, because there's more good sprinkled throughout the undercard. Not necessarily that it's great, but it's just that, you know, Warrior Rude is a good match. Towers and the Rockers is a good match. The Brainbusters and Strikeforce is fun. You get some good stuff in there. But in terms of the negatives, again, we're talking bottom 10 here. It's a dead crowd again. It's Trump Plaza. You got a lot of the same problems that beleaguered for. Apart from the Mega Powers match, I think the build for pretty much everything else sucked ass. I didn't like the Jake Andre build. The match was worse. There's, again, one of the staples of the early WrestleManias is the amount of non-finishes you get, and you get plenty of them here. Again, Jake Andre, DiBiase Beefcake goes to a double countout. Hacksaw Bad News goes to a shitty finish as well. Piper's Pit with Morton Downey Jr. on this show.
Be kind, the man's dead.
I will be, but I mean, it is just, it's not good watching, you know. I know that WWE likes to make a big deal out of it, but it's not fun to watch. This was, outright we'll say it now, this was the most polarizing show in the feedback in terms of what people thought. A lot of people think this was bad. A lot of people kind of make a bit of a defense for this, and I sense that opinions may be split around the table. So I don't know who we want to go to first. Who wants to step in on Mania 5 and me placing it here in the bottom 10?
First of all, was Red Rooster versus Bobby Heenan the
Rooster
same?
Rooster Heenan was the semi-main.
Right.
And okay. I'll give you brownie points if you know who Bobby Heenan's second to the ring was for that match.
I know.
Wait. I don't work for brownie points.
The man.
that's the first time I've heard you say that.
Thank you, Carl.
The person who seconded Bobby Heenan was the man who handed the Raw Bowl over. It is the Brooklyn Brawler, Steve Lombardi, gets his WrestleMania payday.
Yeah, for me, 5 and 6, very close. Just parallels, obviously, era, nostalgia's similar for both. Both have an iconic match. 6, much better setting and crowd. 5, the better build for the main event. I would say I probably enjoyed Warrior Hogan more than Warrior Savage as a standalone match, but I would agree and put this higher than 6 because of the build of the match. Very important. And I'm looking, yeah, the rest, in terms of comparing the two, I think you're really wasting your time. it's much and muchness, you know, some average, some okay.
Yeah.
But
yeah, you wouldn't call it any more than
no, okay. just okay. So yeah, so whatever. Some shit on there as well, as you said. And also the one thing I'd put it ahead of 6 is the result 6 was kind of null and void within 10 months or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously the Warrior run being a failure for the obvious reasons we stated. So I'd be inclined to go 5 above 6. On that premise, really, yeah.
I completely understand what you're saying about the main event of 6 and why you prefer that to 5. I understand the logic entirely.
And Kyle Ross agrees with me.
Yeah, well, the greatest man in Western civilization, Rick Morris, agrees with me. So we're in a standoff, Mr.
Ooh,
O'Rourke.
Mixed tag match.
The reason I prefer Savage Hogan over Warrior Hogan is I think the match stands up better now, to me personally. And there are some matches that I think are quite fun. Perfect Blue Blaze, whilst you can't go overboard about it because it's a short match.
It's five minutes,
but I still enjoyed it. But I know what you're saying.
And the crowd doesn't give a shit.
Well, okay, just. You're just going to obliterate this now.
This is part of the issue with 5, though. Again, the dead crowd doesn't help. It makes the show so plodding, you know. We've talked about some highlights there, but we're not even getting into the stuff like Dino Bravo, Ronnie Garvin, and stuff. You know, Hercules Haku, there's sluggish stuff.
Hercules Haku, which opens the show, is a real, you know, probably one of the worst opening matches you could ever conceive to open WrestleMania. Don't get me wrong, this WrestleMania isn't without its faults by any means. You've got the Run DMC little concert that no one cares about. For some reason, you've got Jimmy Snuka introduced to the crowd, for him to walk down the steps do his I love you pose, and then walk back up the aisle.
Thanks for coming,
whilst,
Jimmy.
Whilst, you know, the entire crowd just sits on their hands. There are problems with this show. Don't get me wrong, and it's well deserving of its place in the bottom 10. But I put it above 6 because I think the main event holds better. I enjoyed matches like Blazer and Perfect. I thought that the Twin Towers and Rockers was a real fun match. I think Rick Rude did a real great effort to get a good match out of the Warrior at this point.
Pales in comparison to SummerSlam at that year.
It's not as good as their following match, and probably not as good as the cage match they would have at SummerSlam 90, but I still think it's pretty good. Bottom 10, absolutely, but I put it just above 6.
What can I say? I completely disagree with your placing of this show. Not just within the bottom 10, but the fact that you've put it in the bottom 10. This, for me, is probably going to be the biggest change in opinion from the group, where this is in my top 10.
I don't know how the case can be made for that.
The nostalgia for this from when I watched it, and, you know, I'll get to Savage, obviously. But this show, I still enjoy it now. Yes, there's not some great stuff on there, but in general, I enjoy the show. Jake Roberts, Andre.
Oh, that's awful.
I know how bad it is. I recognise how bad it is. But as a kid, when I was watching it, I enjoyed it. I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was hilarious how the big giant gets scared of snakes. Rude Ultimate Warrior, second favourite match on this card. And I love this match because the thing with Rude, Rude I was a huge fan of. In terms of the Rude Ultimate Warrior series, I actually watched them in the reverse order, because I first started watching wrestling at SummerSlam 90. So I saw that, liked Rude, gutted he didn't win. Then down the line, I watched SummerSlam 89, where he loses again, and I'm pissed off, and I'm thinking, well, he was Intercontinental Champion, goddammit, not realising how he won it. And going, goddammit, this fiscally pisses me off. So I end up going to WrestleMania 5 down
the
line.
Like a great story, the babyface wins in the end.
Yeah, the babyface wins in the end. And you know, and as the rightful babyface, he wins the title and then quickly runs away from the bad guy. He said the absolute selling point of this, besides Rick Rude's amazing recovery and winning the Intercontinental title, is the Hulk Hogan Savage match, which, for me personally, obviously, I rate this higher than the Ultimate Warrior Hogan match, because it's just all about the story. Even if it had the asshole one in the end, it was just like the build was fantastic. It's why it'll be in my top 10.
And the buy rate was through the roof because of it,
yeah,
too.
But just the nostalgia of the mega powers exploding. I do recognise the bad in it. There are too many matches in it. There's enough in it that I enjoy, even if now, by to anyone's standards, they're not the best.
Getting on to what you think about WrestleMania 5, because like I said, this was very polarising. Al from Pro Wrestling Only. WrestleMania 5 is a show that if you edit it down, it can be a great show. It's just so long that it becomes a slog, almost like sitting through a television taping for as much as they present. Samuel from F4W says, Mania 5 was awful. The dirt worst. What was the Red Rooster versus Bobby Heenan doing on a WrestleMania? Kayfabe1984 from Pro Wrestling Only. He says calls this an interminable show that just drags and drags and drags. Rockin' Robin singing the anthem. Run DMC.
Oh my God, man.
Singing using that term literally. Run DMC rapping to everyone's displeasure. And a goofy Piper's Pit segment along with a crowd colder than an Alaskan winter's day didn't make this a fun show to sit through. Crowbro from F4W says, I never get why 5 is looked upon so much better than 4. Both are bottom 10, but 5 doesn't get nearly the grief. It's an overloaded card with only about 3 or 4 matches having any build. 4 at least had the aura of the held up belt, and most of the non-tourney matches had a storyline or felt important. Yo-Yo's Roomie from Pro Wrestling Only disagrees and says, WrestleMania 5 seems low. Solid matches like Haku Hercules, ooh, Rockers Towers, Perfect Blazer, Buster's Strike Force, and then good matches in Rude Warrior and Hogan Savage, I put it in my top 15 probably. Old Wrestling Nerd from the Wrestling Forum, it says, personally I think 5 should be higher. WrestleMania 5 had the mega powers exploding, plus one of Warrior and Rude's better matches, a pretty good tag title match under handicap rules, one of the better turns in WrestleMania history with Rick Martel walking out on Tito Santana, and the Mania debuts of Shawn Michaels and Owen Hart. It is also my first WrestleMania, so it's always going to be a little bit special to me, but I think 5 was very underrated. Rory Feist from the UK fanform says, I can't argue with most of your selections apart from 5 and 6, which are two of the better ones from the first 9. Reznor from the UK fanform, to wrap this up, says 5 and 6 have no place being so low on that list in my opinion. Both of them were fine and probably deserve to be somewhere in the middle, although 6 is still a big favourite of mine for nostalgic reasons. There's a pattern here with the feedback that I've noticed. The positives are all as much of an argument they want to make, there's a bit of a tieback always to that nostalgic
it's
feeling.
Nostalgia. I would argue, I'm not sure how far nostalgia can go to claim that Haku Hercules is good, or that that handicap match with the Powers of Pain and Demolition is any good. I draw a line there.
I see the point though, in terms of, again, it's kind of a tough one to weigh, because it's not devoid of quality, this show, like most of the ones we've talked about. There's that massive depth, and there's one good thing. The reason why I place this above the previous ones is because this does have that little bit more. How far that little bit more goes, we'll get to now as we move along to the next WrestleMania on the list, which is number 22, WrestleMania 29 from 2013. When I first wrote this list last year, and I'll mention it now, at number 21 is WrestleMania 27 from 2011. I had these differently last year. I had these the other way around because I hated 27 that much. I've put WrestleMania 29 back upon further reflection, because when I was actually thinking about this show, number 29, there's so little to get into. There's so little to enjoy. Taker and Punk is a very good match, and the crowd's very, very lively for that. Rock and Cena, I think, is a very good match, even though the crowd's not really with it, because that match was done the year before. It was a rematch that no one really wanted. It was the result that no one really asked for. In terms of the cons and why it's bottom 10, like I said, dead crowd for the top two matches. Not just Rock and Cena, but Triple H Lesnar might as well have been called a deafening silence match. The build-up for this WrestleMania was also really weak. After such a great job with Rock and Cena 1 at 28, the 1 year of build, the great promos, very different style of building up a main event, this year they really just phoned it in. It was just like, okay, we're doing the rematch. There doesn't really seem like there's any heat between the two anymore, but we're doing it anyway because it's the match that we're going to go with and we need to give Cena the win. This, 29 and 27, the two that I've chosen here, are real victims of what you talked about earlier on, Kieran, Matt, how there's a glut of WrestleManias after about 25, maybe starting a bit before, depending on your personal opinion, where so many of them just bleed in together because you've got the same roster on the same treadmill, short of one or two guys in different spots and then bringing back a different established, already made star. So many of these WrestleManias, that they bleed together. Mark Henry and Ryback is just fucking atrocious and is one of the more overlooked awful matches in WrestleMania history. The commentary on this show is abysmal. I don't know why, but it's one of those things where, and we've talked about it in WrestleMania 2 in terms of bad commentary, this is almost as bad just because they should be doing so much better. The Rock Cena match in particular, that there's just long stretches of dead air and it's not helping that match at all. The commentary does this show no favours. I kind of find it, especially when it comes to a list like this, I find, and it's probably the same with you guys, it's probably the same for you folks at home too, when you come up with a list like this, depending on the day, you can put certain shows above certain other ones, depending on what barometer you want to come up with. And when I think about the conversation we just had with WrestleMania 5, I find it tough to justify this one being above Mania 5 in some respects, but I do think Taker and Punk was a better match than anything on 6 and 5. Nostalgic value aside, I think Taker and Punk was a very, very good match. I think Rock and Cena was good, but again, hurt by a bad crowd, but it doesn't mean the match itself wasn't quality. And throughout the show, again, the depths of bad on this show weren't as bad as the depths of bad on 5 with matches like Jake Andre. Henry Ryback, like I said, not very good, but for the most part, it was just a show that was just kind of there, just kind of on cruise control until the peak, which was Taker and Punk. Everything after that didn't really hit the mark. I find it hard. I don't have a visceral hatred to this one, WrestleMania 29, as much as I do the bad stuff on 6, 5, 4, 2, 1, 9, and 11 that we've talked about so far, and 15 too. It's kind of, the bad is there, but there's also good, and I think overall that brings the weighing of this WrestleMania up a step over WrestleMania 5, although I admit it's pretty close, and on a different day I could rank it differently.
Yeah, I agree, this is a tough one. I mean, I'd say Punk Taker is better than anything we've talked about so far as a match, but the biggest thing that stands out for this is there is a lot of wasted talent on the show.
Oh, big time.
Like Shield, who were fucking great,
and Red Hot at the time.
Yeah, I guess nothing match was that. Well, to read there, Orton, Sheamus, and Big Show. I can't even remember the match, to be honest.
No, it was nothing.
If I can't remember a Shield match. Okay, it was Fandango's debut, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's Fandango and Jericho. Not a bad match, but just a waste of Jericho.
Like a massive waste of, well, misuse of Brock. Obviously,
yeah, that really pissed me off. Yeah. In terms of a downer, in terms of a bad decision that hurts this show, the fact that Triple H had to beat Brock Lesnar and get his win back, fucking atrocious.
Yeah. You like Bryan and Ziggler in a tag match with respective balls and chains. A theme of a lot of recent ones for me, just a disappointment at the end of the show. It's like, oh, okay, well, there you go. That was that. It's over now. And what else you got in there? Del Rio and Swagger.
Yeah.
Was it? Was it really? Who cares?
Yeah.
So I think that's, yeah, I mean, match wise, I don't think, again, there's not as, there isn't the dross that you've got on other shows. But I was massively disappointed and meh at the end of it. Yeah. Meh. So
very
what?
Meh, apart from one Seen standout it. Match. And again, yeah. That one standout carries it above because I don't think the bad as the previous bad.
And I don't think I thought for a second Punk was winning that match. It was just,
no,
I can't remember. My actual emotions at the time, thinking like, it's just, wow, you still got a good match there, so well done.
It's when you told me we were going to do this, and I drew up my own list to try and get some sort of comparison and to have a vibe as we go through the podcasts. We ended up with the same bottom 10, though not necessarily in the same order, and that speaks to number 29 and 27, because I've actually got them the other way round to you.
Yeah. Well, I did too 1 year ago, so well, again, exactly, and ask me again next year.
Exactly, and it speaks to the point we made earlier about when you get into the 20s, some of them can bleed into each other because they're, you know, you have the sort of the early 20s, if you like, where every WrestleMania has a Money in the Bank ladder match, and there's that ability to mesh and to sort of not really stick in the memory the way that, say, earlier ones would have. We all knew going in that Cena was going to get his win back, and nobody wanted to see it. I gave it a bit of a pass in the sense that Rock was hurt. So in terms of the match, I know it's looking back in retrospect, but knowing what we know now, I sort of take that as read that, yeah, okay, he was hurt going in, so it does affect the match. Punk Taker, I think, is, as a standalone match, wasn't a fan of the build.
No,
don't get me started on the build. I thought the build was awful, but as a standalone match is the probably the best individual match of anything we've referenced. I'm not sure if Kieran said that already, so I might be echoing his remarks there. But part of the reason I have 29 ahead of 27, and I agree with what you say, 29 is coasting to a degree, and Ryback and Henry is poor. But 27, when I made sort of brief sort of crib notes for this, if you like, and what I put next to 27, the first bullet point I made was, thank God Rock was there. Because let's be honest, no one is going to that show to see The Miz versus John Cena.
We can talk about the specifics afterwards.
We'll go into that. But
I agree with Carl on the state of when I was drawing up this list. I've got 29 and 27 in there, and I had 27 further down than 29. I just think it's worse. Just because, and Carl just briefly went into some of those points about how bad 27 is. I think there is another one within the 20s that's worse than 27. But, personally. But 29, there isn't anything hugely offensive of the show, but it shares with me, actually probably the closest one, to the first WrestleMania. As you know, I feel so disconnected to it. Considering it wasn't that long ago, I had to look down at what happened on it, and it really is just a nothing card. It really is, and I mean that all the way through. Del Rio, Jack Swagger, I think this was the match I was least interested in, and I think it was the match that Vince McMahon was least interested in, because if you remember right, we didn't even get to see Jack Swagger's entrance.
Really?
Do you remember that?
No.
I'm pretty certain this is the one where they cut to like a commercial or something, and when they come back, Jack is already at ringside. He's already at ringside on the quad bike. He's literally parked right by the ring, and he's getting off, getting into the ring. So you don't actually get to see his entrance. Hogan and Rock stayed at one match. I know they did a second one, but they didn't do it at WrestleMania. They did it at No Way Out, and it was entertaining as a No Way Out match, but they didn't dare to put it at WrestleMania again because they knew it wasn't going to be the same. They should have learnt from that. Okay, the lesson they'd already learned, they should have relearned it again. They shouldn't have done Cena Rock again, because by that time, those two had already been going back and forth, whether it was every now and again, they'd already been going back and forth, not just on the lead up to WrestleMania 28, but on the lead up to WrestleMania 27 as well, in which like a lot of the best material had already been done. That feud had run dry, because we'd almost had 2 years of it. it wasn't great, as you said.
Even then, they didn't even try. Like, they didn't even try. There's no effort.
The Undertaker, CM Punk. I can understand why people would say this is probably the best match so far in a top 10. I personally prefer Macho Man Hogan, but it's a good match. It is the best match on the card. My issue with this whole thing is that they actually got the opponents the wrong way round. I think, personally, if they changed it round so it was Rock, CM Punk, and Cena, Undertaker, I would have been a lot more interested in that show, and I think the matches and the shows itself would have been a lot better, because even though you got a firm belief the Rock's winning on this, you could still maybe in some way pretend that maybe they might make Punk retain the title in order to carry on boosting them up, make him bigger. He beats the Rock at Mania, the title reign continues. There's a way where that match, because the Rumble match I was so much more into than anything on this card, I didn't believe for 1 second Punk was going to beat Undertaker. But again, because of the John Cena treatment, I could believe that Cena could end the streak. And I think they would have had I think Cena Undertaker could have had a better match than what Punk and Undertaker had.
I am disappointed they've never did Taker and Cena when the streak was intact, because I think people would have bought that Cena could have beaten him.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure how they would have clicked in ring, and you know, I'm happy to put Cena over when he has good matches, because he has a lot of good matches, but I'm not sure how the dynamic between the two would have worked. If you put Punk in there with Rock, Punk would go over, because Rock wouldn't be around, so he'd...
It's worth remembering that Punk took time off after that Mania, so it's hard to say whether or not he would have wanted the belt kept on him if he's got one eye on taking time off.
Give him a win over the Rock at WrestleMania. Okay,
in the main event to beat the Rock, okay. I think he cancels his fucking holiday.
Maybe I'm trying to be too cold about this. Okay, fair enough. But as much as we as fans may have preferred to have seen, I'm not entirely sold on Rock Punk at Mania personally, and it's hard to, as much as they coasted, and it's frustrating. You know, the Legends panel didn't do it for me either. It's hard to really argue with them going back to Rock Cena, considering the success of the previous year.
Alright, getting to your feedback here about WrestleMania 29. Shane O'Mac version 2 from the UK fan forum comes to the defence of this show. I thought 29 was really good. Rock vs Cena was a huge main event. The MetLife Stadium was glorious with all the little set pieces, especially the Statue of Liberty. We had Punk vs Undertaker, which will probably have the lasting legacy of being Undertaker's last great match, and possibly his last WrestleMania win. The crowd wasn't too hot for Lesnar Triple H, but I really enjoyed it. Had some cool spots with the Kimura and the Steel Stairs, and was far more entertaining than their sluggish SummerSlam match. Those main event matches are more than enough to put it in the top half of WrestleManias for me personally. At a decent undercard with the Shield's WrestleMania debut, Henry vs Ryback, Del Rio vs Swagger, and Fandango Y2J, I definitely have WrestleMania 29 pretty high on my list. Best is always subjective in wrestling, but as far as those undercard matches, I take those solid if unspectacular matches over some of the higher ranked WrestleManias by a significant margin. So a little bit of a difference of opinion there in terms of the quality of the undercard and the impact that it had.
I think, given you know the recent proximity to it, and you know the Taker Punk thing, and Rock was there, I can totally see why people would rate it higher. But
Whilst our own individual rankings are subjective, it's hard to argue too much with the logic that the emailer throws in there. He references the Shield, and we've talked a little bit there about how their appearances in many respects are throwaways, if you like, but at least it was the match went the way it should go. You know, they beat, whilst it is the opener, it is against Orton, Sheamus and Big Show, and they do go over clean, so at least it's the right thing. While when you get to the following year, whilst it's the Outlaws and Kane, they do completely obliterate them, so it's the right thing. So whilst I understand that their Mania moments, if you like, aren't meaningful and aren't going to be talked about years from now, at least as a sort of a general principle going forward, they did the right things with them. So I think whilst I wouldn't have it as high as that emailer has it, I don't find fault in his logic at all.
And for the final one that we're going to discuss this week for the bottom 10, at number 21, as already mentioned, WrestleMania 27 from 2011. This, again, on a different day, I could rate this far lower, because I do think that this show is pretty bad. Taker and Triple H, I think, is a very good match. Some people may not like it, but I do think this is very good. That there's some really good false finishes and interesting twist at the end. To me, the reason why I rated this one higher over 29 is because I think the build to this show is so far superior to 29 that it's not even funny, because 29's build, I think Triple H, Lesnar, Take a Punk, Roxanne, it was all very underwhelming and all had a sense of, we already know what the pieces are in place, we're not even going to try. This year, between Rock's return, which lit a fire under everything for a very short period of time, the Cole Lawler build, which while the match itself is what it is, the build with Lawler's promos and Cole being a dick, I thought was really, really well done. Ultimately, it was just such a completely disappointing show in every single way. The show itself has very little of merit. Again, on a different day, I could probably rate this beneath 29. Very disappointing show. Rock didn't actually do much, which really hurt. The whole show was really built around the excitement of Rock, and then he didn't really do anything outside of a very kind of by the numbers running in the main event and a promo at the start, which kind of does nothing for anybody. Cena and Miz is an atrocious match before the finish. And I don't even want to give credit to Mrs. Concussion. It's the most... I remember watching that match live, and we're looking at it, and it's just like, there's one spot where Cena does like a tackle, and Miz drops down, where he drops down about, I think about a year before Cena actually does the jump, and it just looks terrible. It's like, these two guys have no business in the main event of WrestleMania. And then they've, you know, Cena's had a lot of good matches, this is not one of them. And everything else on the show just... was just so flat. Edge Del Rio on first was the first of that horrible pattern of putting a world title match on first, which I despise that trend that they did there for a few years of putting world title matches on at the beginning of a pay-per-view. Don't agree with that philosophy at all. Very little on this show outside of the one match to enjoy, but the build-up, which, like I said, and the impact on the next 2 years of WrestleMania's with a Rock Cena doing fantastic business, I think nudges this one ahead on this day. Again, different day, different opinion, perhaps.
Yeah, I'd also put this above 29, simply on the premise that the Taker match was better. Personally speaking, I did enjoy the Triple H affair. Fucking Miz, average.
Oh, you hated him during this period.
Overpushed and yeah, not for me. Although I'll get a kick out of him now. Cody Mysterio, I can't remember that match happening. Del Rio, is he the most disappointing overpushed wrestler of the last 10 years?
Yes.
Yeah, I think very possibly.
If he's not top, he's not far away.
He's battling with Kane probably, but no, probably even ahead of Del Rio. Kane in the last 10. Lawler Cole, great build, but the match fucking sucked. Tag match on here: Wade Barrett, Heath Slater, Justin Gabriel, and Ezekiel Jackson.
The core.
Yeah. Or the cause, that famous Irish band, versus Kane, Santino, Kofi, and the Big Show. I can't remember that either.
No, nothing. Punk and Orton could have been great, but it was very much kind of average. They kind of hamstrung it with a leg injury angle, so it was kind of, it wasn't going to be a spectacular match. Perfectly acceptable, but I wouldn't call it great or anything
like that. Yeah, disappointing for the two guys, you think, I think. But I mean, you got Taker, Triple H, so it's not a complete scrub of a show. Disappointing.
What makes me think of this as a lower show than it may be is just because, like I said, the build was so good. The expectations were up for the first time in quite a while, I felt like, for this could be something that goes somewhere, perhaps, for the future of the business. And as it turned out, it delivered so little.
I understand what you're saying in terms of build, and the Rock reintroduction didn't give it a good shot in the arm. But the build to me only goes so far if, like, it's like when you light the dynamite. You can light the dynamite, it can give a bit of a spark, but if the explosion's not there, by which I mean the show itself, then the build isn't enough. Whilst the build may have been good and the Rock reintroduction was good, Miz Cena, as we've referenced there, is just awful. It's a terrible match. And as good as the build may have been, I can't get that out of my mind. I agree wholeheartedly with the idea. The premise of a world title match opening the show, I think, is awful. And to me, it devalues the Rumble winner as well.
They didn't even mention that.
Obviously, they did it back-to-back years. They did it with Del Rio winning the Rumble. Then the following year, they did it with Sheamus winning the Rumble. And the fact that it opened, to me, devalues the Rumble as well. So it serves a negative purpose in that sense. Michael Cole and Lawler, again, and you don't expect it to be good, but the way to salvage it is to give it the right ending.
If you give it the
ending that people want, then you can almost put the bad match to one side because it's resolved in the right way. And to put Michael Cole over is just hideous.
They got greedy. They wanted to. They thought they had something with the old core. They wanted to extend it for a couple of months. Let's try and drag some more mileage to carry the next couple of pay-per-views.
Yeah, and it just didn't work. I'm adamant on that to this day. Without The Rock there, that card does not do a million buys.
That card bumps. Even with Taker Triple H, which did have a good build, that match on its own wasn't going to carry it. The success it had, Cena Miz certainly wasn't going
to. No. And getting to Taker Triple H, it's not that I didn't enjoy the match. I did enjoy it. But I clearly don't hold it in as high a regard as some others do. And that's not to say that other people call it a classic by any means. But people seem to rank it a bit higher than I do. I've talked about this before, Liam, and to me it's almost like a video game in the way that it involves multiple chair shots and you break the plexiglass for the coal mine and all that sort of thing. And it's all just what are the big spots we can do on the computer game that look impressive and mesh it into the match. And for me it's just, in that sense, something's not there, or something doesn't, I can't quite describe it, but something just doesn't sit right.
Yeah. I do have a slight, like I said, a different opinion. Not to kind of try and justify the position of its placement here at the top of the bottom 10, but like I said, between the hype to this show and Taker and Triple H, which I did think delivered, I do think that match is good. The spot where Triple H does the tombstone was the first time. As good as the Shawn Michaels matches are, in my opinion, I never believed Shawn had a prayer of breaking the streak at any point. But that was the first time years where I thought, that actually could be it.
Yeah, I'd agree entirely on that bit. There were one or two moments where you think, ooh, this might be it, whereas with Shawn, I never believed the streak was in doubt.
And it was Triple H, so we could all believe.
So our minds work by into that. I see where you're going there completely. Yeah.
Exactly. So for that point, I do like that match a lot, to the point where I think that is the best match we've talked about on this show so far, Taker Triple H at Mania 27. I don't think there's any real disagreement there.
No, I'd agree with that. And then the Punk Taker match is the next best, I'd say. So, yeah.
No, see, I'd personally put Punk Taker above it.
Really?
Yeah.
Personally still put a Macho Man Hogan before all that. If you'd asked me just straight off before researching and told me what happened at WrestleMania 27, I couldn't remember. It would probably take me a minute to remember it was Cena Miz. Going backwards, trying to think, oh yeah, that's the one we've seen.
And you were all about the Miz at the time, just to give some context.
I will get into that shortly. But once I'm looking at this, I remember this card really well. And this is why I have this lower on the shit list than 29, because 29 was more missed opportunities. Like, yeah, that could have been tweaked, that could have been tweaked, that could have been better, but nothing too hugely offensive. First off, the match that I was actually looking forward to the most on this show was the Sheamus Daniel Bryan match for the United States, which ended up being a pre-show, Robin Salt into the wound. That match is stopped and then turned into a battle royale, which the great Carly wins. Right,
so take that, your smart marks.
Yeah, so exactly right. So straight away, the match I was actually genuinely looking for is not there. Undertaker Triple H, absolutely right. I actually liked this match. I thought it was pretty good. No, it wasn't as good as the Shawn Michaels ones, but I liked the finish. The fact that Undertaker wins by Triple H just beating the crap out of him, and he quickly, Undertaker out of nowhere has a desperate move, locks on the Hell's Gate and makes him tap, and Undertaker is the one that's wheeled out and Triple H is the one standing and walking away. And I thought at the time, I was like, there's going to be a rematch there, and I was intrigued by it. I was intrigued when he turned around and said, I was the one that walked away, I know I can beat you, I want to face you again. And I thought that was actually a pretty good way of setting up a second match, a lot better than what they did with Cena Rock. I hated every fucking moment of heel Michael Cole. I hated the match, I hated the build, I hated everything. I couldn't wait for him to leave that role. I'm still waiting for him to fuck off completely. I couldn't stand.
Been waiting a while, I think,
yeah, I know, unfortunately, yeah. Just every moment it was cringeworthy. I hated that entire run. The main event itself, which as I said we were talking about at this time, I was a Miz mark. I did enjoy him. I was a fan of his when he was a United States champion. Right, there's always one. I was a fan of his when he's United States champion. I saw potential in there. When he won the world title, the WWE title, I was like, oh, this is going to be interesting. He's going to face Cena. To see The Miz actually win this, I was amazingly surprised, obviously, and I think I probably did pop if I remember right. It's the match itself wasn't great. Obviously, there was a situation with a possible concussion with The Miz as well, after a spot to the outside, wasn't it?
Tackle.
Some tackle to the outside. He banged his head.
Unfortunately, he was fine.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, in terms of what, like, The Rock's involvement, I don't know if I was quite disappointed with it. I actually, he did what I fully expected him to do, which was do some promos, do some funny backstage skits with guys who we haven't seen him with for a while, and then come out and screw John Cena over. And when he did, I cheered. So it was just, he pretty much did what I thought he was going to do.
And as well, when he's actually wrestling for the first time the next year.
Yeah.
I'm in terms of whetting the appetite for Rock. I'm not so against what he did or didn't do.
Yeah.
But I think when you build a show around the guy,
yeah,
maybe give him a little bit more.
Yeah.
Well, the thing was too, if the rest of the card had been up to par, I don't think that Rock's involvement on the show would have been considered bad. The fact that everything else underdelivered to such a degree that when you're looking to The Rock as like the beacon of hope to try and make this show, since that's really what we all paid to see, and there's really not too much there to sink your teeth into, just that it is what it is.
The pop that Rock got when he was announced as the host was fucking huge, as it obviously was going to be. That was a great moment. The Rock's promo, he's at home talking to the president on the phone, and he gets interrupted by John Cena's music, and out comes a kid dressed as John Cena, and he cuts, for me, my favourite Rock promo of all time, where he just runs down the whole character right to the point where he's wiping the tears out of the kid's eye with one of Cena's t-shirts, and he goes, here, wipe your tears on this, no one gives a shit about this anyway, spits on the shirt and throws it away, which I was like, holy crap, because that was heel Rock right there, and I loved it. It was absolutely brilliant. And then after he's done all the comedy, he tells the kid to bugger off, he turns to the camera and then does a serious promo on The Miz. And then also on the show itself, we were watching it the other day, the open video for Miz.
Oh, you can before hate me now.
Yeah, You Hate Me Now, where it's showing, you know, footage of great moments in previous WrestleManias that we've come across already. Cutting that with scenes from when he was in the real world and so on. So there were highlights in the build with The Rock and bits with The Miz, but the overall show itself, I think, is definitely worse than 29.
Standalone show, I'm not really going to disagree if you take them both in isolation, but again, it seems defensive almost of the list to try and say that, again, it's more than just the show itself. The implications of 27 long term were more long reaching than 29, which I think underwhelmed in pretty much every way. Just to get to people's opinions on this placement, Tiger Pride from Pro Wrestling Only says 27 has Taker versus Triple H and Orton versus Punk, both tremendous matches, though I know people are split on Taker Triple H. Del Rio versus Edge is fun, and Cody versus Ray is a fine match too. Grecian from the UK Fan Forum says Mania 27 is the absolute worst for me. Essentially, the main event is set up to make Rock versus Cena at 28. Miz becomes a bit part player despite winning and retaining the title. This match pretty much condemned him to mid-card nothingness for life. Cena was even worse during this match. The whole thing just looked disjointed, clumsy, and they had zero chemistry between them. Chuck in the 2-minute Core v SmackDown Faces match, the dullness of Cody vs. Ray, John Morrison throwing a strop about Trish and Snooki, Brian vs. Sheamus being relegated to the dark match so The Rock could have a 20-minute promo, and the oddness of Edge vs. Del Rio, where Del Rio seemed more upset about one of his many cars being trashed than losing a world title match at WrestleMania. The fact that Michael Cole vs. Jerry Lawler was one of the most heavily promoted matches on the card pretty much sums up everything that's wrong with this one. What could have been a mildly amusing 10-minute comedy match turns into a 20-minute disaster that got stretched across another two pay-per-views. Punk vs. Orton was about the best thing on the card. Taker vs. Triple H was pretty decent. The rest of it just sucked. Gulls from F4W Online says 27 was worse than 29, so there's a... It's not the only person to think that. Wiretap from F4W agrees, saying, I'd say that Taker and Triple H was better than anything on 29, but aside from that match, 27 was a disaster. It was like Rock being there caused them to completely forget how to put a show together. Forgetting the awful finish, has there ever been a time in history where the Mania main event got shortchanged on time? Without Taker Triple H, this was almost the December to Dismember of WrestleManias, in terms of being completely out to lunch. And finally, Super23 from Pro Wrestling Only says, 27 seems to be taking too much of a beating to me. I was at 27 and 29, and I'm not sure which show overall I like better. 27's main event of Cena vs. Miz isn't good, but neither is Cena vs. Rock at 29, really. I don't think anything on either show was as bad as Lawler vs. Cole, but Triple H vs. Taker is my favourite match on both shows, above the Punk match. I also don't think 29 had a Punk vs. Orton type match that is good from an undercard perspective. I have no problem calling WrestleMania 27 maybe a bottom 10 at WrestleMania, but I don't see it being worse than 4, 9, 15, 2, 1, or 11. Which pretty much sums up this entire podcast here, because we have run the gamut of the bottom 10. I don't know if there's any thoughts around the table. We are going to obviously get to the middle 10 on next week's podcast, but around the table, any thoughts on the bottom 10, the placements? Anybody got any major grievances that we haven't already touched on with regards to the bottom 10 and the placement that we have?
No, not really. I've got no major grievances at all. Like I say, when I compile my own list, just sort of a point of reference, if you like, I had the same bottom 10 as you, but the order's slightly different, but nothing completely out of whack.
Pretty much the same. When you've got the... So you've got 9 and 11, 27, 29, it's going to be close between them anyway.
Yeah, I do think that there is, like I said, that differentiation between the F grade and the D grade, as I put them there at 26th level, is pretty telling, because there are, to me, a standout crop where if any of them were picked as the worst, I would probably, if you can make the argument, I could maybe go with it.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, I'm probably a little bit different from these guys, because there's two that I didn't agree with, obviously.
Those being 5 and...
15.
Okay.
Yeah, apart from that, I mean, I as I said earlier, you know, if we're actually to go by the schematic that you were using, I think you're pretty accurate on everything, maybe with the exception of 27 and 29. I like Carl, came up with my own list so that I know what to gripe, what to praise, and what to be indifferent of. And, you know, 2 is still at the bottom, 1, 9, 11... and 4 being like the real dross of the bottom 5.
Fair enough. With that being said, I would like to thank everybody for listening. Again, check out steelchair.co.uk this weekend, because the middle 10 will be online for you to digest there, and I'll be looking for feedback for next week's show. So, thank you very much for joining us. For Kieran O'Rourke,
pleasure as always.
For G. John Chase,
Mania 5 still classic.
And for Carl Jones,
thanks for having me.
I'm Liam O'Rourke, and we are out of here.
I think that Jimmy Cole was a member of the Corrs.